The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to The Secrets of Technology. Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic perspective. Joining me today on the panel are, once again, Joanne Mercier. Hi, Joanne.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be back.
And Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father Corey.
How's it going, Dom?
Excellent. So, first, folks, I want to remind you to like the show on Facebook, on the SQPN Facebook page, to share it, to make sure you subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app. You're on YouTube, where we post the show as an audio-only video, and hit the bell to get notifications on YouTube, and to leave reviews on iTunes or in Google Play or other podcast directories. All those things are going to help us spread the news about this new show. We've got some great feedback from folks who've been listening, who are already excited about it. One listener, and I'm sorry, I didn't write it down. I'll have to remember for next time. He wrote that he was 10 minutes in and it's already his favorite podcast. So thank you so much for such great feedback. We really appreciate it. We're hopeful to only, you know, get better from here on out, and please spread the news on that. So that said, let's get right into our first topic. So there was an article that came out that said, a survey was done that showed that old folks, people older than 65, I should be a little more diplomatic in saying that.
Thank you.
People older than 65 are more likely to share fake news. So fake news was big, of course, in the news in the 2016 election cycle. It's been big news ever since. And the assumption originally was that the sharing of fake news was a function of being conservative, that people who were conservative or people who were voted for Trump were not, which I don't want to get too political on this, because it doesn't have to be. But the assumption was that conservatives shared more fake news. And that was the assumption in a lot of the media. Well, according to this study, it's more a function of age. People over 65 right. were more likely mm-hmm. to share it, and that was true across party lines, across ideologies. So, why do you think that is? You know, do you have any opinions on that? Because the articles that we looked at didn't have mm-hmm. any speculation.
I think, well, one of the articles did. I think the first one that you picked two articles from The Verge, and I think the first one kind of stated that those who are older, who are that older demographic, 65 and up, a lot of this technology is very new to them, relatively
right.
speaking.
There's that,
you know, obviously they didn't grow up with computers. Dom and I, we're the generation that computers kind of came in as we were younger.
Yeah.
And we kind of grew up with computers. Well, this would be our parents' generation who didn't grow up with that, who computers were something that was kind of, you know, they're in their adult years by the time computers become widespread. So they're not as familiar. Now, that's only part of it, because I know people who are, you know, of that mindset, who are very careful about what they share on things like Facebook. But I think that's a part of it. I think maybe those of us who have grown up with the technology are more willing to kind of look at things before we hit the share button, perhaps.
Right. I think that's part of it. I think there might also be a little bit of over trust in the things that they read. There's not enough skepticism, mm-hmm. maybe. What do you think, Joanne? Are they too trusting?
Well, as I'm ready to leave one decade going into the next this year, and being that old, not 65, no, God, no, not yet. but I think amongst older people, when you read it in the newspaper, it had to be true.
Right.
Or when you listen to Walter Cronkite, you know, he was the trusted voice, Edward R. Murrow. So when they heard these things, they believed them. So now you show them things on places like The Verge or, you know, any of these other things that are, you know, everybody has a blog. So they think everything is true.
Right.
So without vetting it, they don't realize that there's no vetters anymore for these things. They have to be their own vetters. And right. I can't tell you how many times I hit Snopes.com. It's like, are you serious? Nah, this isn't real.
Right.
But I can pretty much tell only because I think I was in my early 30s when we first got our first computers. And I was doing my master's degree. And, you know, so I've been using stuff. And I know there are quite a few savvy grandmas out there that, you know how to use their iPhones, iPads, whatever. But right. It's the vetting of this stuff. It's believing what's on Facebook, thinking, oh, I can trust this just like I trusted the newspaper and the television set once upon a time.
Well, it doesn't help much that there are sites that they'll call themselves parody sites or satire sites, and they're really not. They're just flat out troll sites.
Right.
That they look like the local network news.com, you know. Ooh, and things yes. like that, where they you've all seen them, where they look like, you know, it's got the little Channel 20 News logo at the top and right. all these things.
And Tom Cruise is moving to your hometown.
Yes. Oh, I hate those stupid ads. Those ads need to die in a fire. Those are terrible.
Yes. Yeah. How many people have left? They're leaving and they have these are their last words.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. True. Yeah. And it's you have to, you really have, I've gotten to the point where when I am linked to a news article, before I even read the news article, if it's not obvious, you know, you can still tell a legitimate newspaper, a legitimate TV station. It's still pretty clear. But when there's a question, the first thing I do is hit the about button. I go find the about button.
Right.
And even see, and if the site looks, if there's even something that looks even remotely sketchy, gone. Close the tab out. I'm not interested.
Or even, you know, you look at the other articles on there and sometimes they're just so outlandish. How can anyone believe that, you know, I think there's a bit of confirmation bias as well that, you know, that I want to believe it. And so I think that it's true. Now, one of the things that this article points out is that even though people over 65 are the fastest growing demographic on Facebook, elderly people still use social media at very low rates. So who is the 70-year-old who's spending a lot of time on Facebook right now? It's not your typical 70-year-old. So you might have people, older Facebook users might have a disproportionately strong interest in partisan politics. That's the from the article. So there's a point there.
I'm sitting here laughing because he's not 70 years old yet, but this is my dad. My dad loves Facebook. And Dad, if you happen to listen to it, good for you. But
yes,
my dad is on Facebook all the time.
I have a former pastor who's moved across country and who's on Facebook, and he's got to be in his mid-80s. And the stuff he puts out there, I just shake my head and go, oh, my.
I have an uncle who does the same thing, aunts who send me stuff in like Facebook Messenger, like, stop sending me stuff.
Yes. So. Stop it. Stop the insanity with all these, you know, this is happening. And then you can stop it by doing this. No, please just stop doing this.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So what can we do about it? Well, so the article suggests that, you know, the biggest thing we can do is, well, now that we have a solution, but we know where to start looking, which is if assuming that sharing fake news is primarily a consequence of old age or the digital illiteracy that old age effectively serves as a proxy for, we have a starting point. And I don't want to put it this way, but as the people who aren't familiar with the living online move on, shall we say, to their reward, maybe that, you know, over time, over the next 10, 15, 20 years, it'll be another problem, of course. But
are you saying there's a biological solution to this problem?
There is a long-term chronological biological solution to it.
No, I think everybody should just buddy up with somebody who's older and show them what to do.
Right. Well, the other thing is we need to help find ways that we can help educate older folks about some of the ways that we get scammed, whether right. it's fake news or too good to be true sales or Nigerian princes who want to give you your millions that yeah. help people protect themselves online. And that's
well, I mean, important. How many times do you hear of police departments having to put out alerts saying, no, the IRS is not calling people in this area saying you owe them $100,000 or we will have you arrested? The IRS doesn't work that way.
Right.
My husband is a tax preparer. He reminds his clients every single year that they will not be contacted by email. They will send you a letter.
Yeah, they won't call you. They won't contact you by email. They won't call you with a robo voice. This is the IRS. Right. You have an arrest warrant. You're not. They don't do that.
Well, the IRS doesn't issue arrest warrants.
Either. Right. Exactly.
Right. So that I think it's important that we help people in our lives become to be more safe. And frankly, that's important. Mm-hmm. Whether you're elderly parents or your kids or your brother or sister that are the same age. I mean, we're all susceptible, but I think it's important. I know that I always try to point out fake news when I come across it online.
I think that's the biggest thing we can do.
Why it's fake. So
just kind of say, you know, you go take a look at that website again and take a good look at it and think about it for a few seconds. And a lot of times that does help.
Yeah. Or put up the link to Snopes.com.
Or if sometimes people reject Snopes because they think it has a particular political bias, but there are others.
Really?
Yeah, there are other sources. There's Hoax Slayer and other ones that are out there that do a good job as well. So because it's also fake news about the fake news. So anyway, I'm sure we'll be coming back to the story. We'll put a pin in that and let's move on to our next segment. Which is we're going to talk about the 2019 Consumer Electronics Show just finished. And this is the big Las Vegas glitzy event every year where all of the big consumer electronics companies roll out the latest gadgets that we have to have. These are the things
you'll all be buying.
Pull your checkbook now. Exactly. Yes, here, take my money, please.
Right. So there's always like certain trends every year. And I sent you both some links to some news coverage of CES, and I was wondering if you had anything that stood out to you as an interesting trend for you that you're interested in in consumer electronics. Joanna, let's start with you this time.
Well, since I am unabashedly an Apple fangirl, I was happy to see or not that Apple AirPlay 2 is going to be on a lot of smart TVs.
Mm.
I'm wondering if they're going to cannibalize the the Apple TV now because of this, but they might have something up their sleeve. I know that Apple TV, I've got four of them. I use two of them outside of the house, two of them inside of the house. And I mean, I love them.
Yeah.
But I can understand they're not for everybody. When I take mine to church, if there's a problem with the Wi-Fi, it doesn't work well. So maybe having a TV, especially in a church setting or a community setting, where you can just be able to take your device and AirPlay it to the TV, much like the Chrome little thing from last time.
Right.
I can't see why this isn't a good idea, and I'm glad that they've decided to open up the walled garden just a little bit to let others use it.
Yeah, I think it's a good first step. The reason why Chromecast has taken off as well as it has is the fact that it is completely cross-platform.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you have a Google device, it works. If you have an Apple device, it works. If you have Chrome running on a laptop, it works.
So one caveat to that, one difference though, is that for it to be cross-platform, you have to be using the Google app, which is fine. But the Google app allows you to broadcast to a Chromecast capable device. But
the Google app that you can put on iOS, Android, laptops. you cut me off on my point here, though.
No, I get that.
Apple hasn't done that yet. I can't download the Apple app for my
partly is because it's built into the operating system, and that's the big difference.
Hold on. I'm trying to get to that point. It's not going to be as successful as Chromecast because we think, Apple is this all-dominating smartphone manufacturer. They're really not. They're not the majority of smartphones sold every year.
Right.
Android is.
Sure.
So the majority of smartphones will not work with Apple TV at all.
I think we're missing though what might be going here, because it's not that Apple TV is going to be on all these TVs. There will be some Apple TV on some TV sets will support Apple, but it's not like the Apple TV operating system will be on the TVs. It's just TVs that already support Chrome will also support AirPlay. So it's really just expanding the ability. So, and what Apple's saying is to, you know, for Apple users, you're not going to have to, use the other guy's app to stream. You can just do it directly from your phone or your iPad or your laptop, that sort of thing. So I don't think it's trying to like do away with Chrome. I think it's just saying, let's just make it a little easier for our people. I mean, there's no reason for them not to do it.
I also think it's Apple's going, we're being left behind on this.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, they were.
My TV I bought downstairs from, I'll admit it, it's Walmart. It's a Walmart, relatively cheap Vizio TV. It's decent. It's a nice TV and everything. It has Chromecast baked in. I don't have to have the little Chromecast dongle.
Right.
And Joanne, you were talking about, with Apple TV. I was misspeaking. I meant AirPlay.
Yeah.
Which is still, my point still stands. Sure. I just used the wrong word. Right. I think I wouldn't be surprised at all if the next generation Apple TV doesn't look like the little
set-top
box.
I think you're right.
I think it's going to be closer to a Chromecast, where it's a dongle that hangs off the back of your TV that you don't see, and it's all done wirelessly.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that all the devices is kind of working that way anyways. You see the Fire Stick, Amazon Fire Stick, same kind of principle. Mm-hmm. You plug it in the back of the TV. You don't see it, but it works.
Yeah.
Now,
for me, I don't want to use the smart TV stuff on my TVs, because frankly, I don't trust Samsung or LG or Vizio to protect my privacy and to not spy on me. I don't connect them to Wi-Fi. Apple has made privacy a corporate value, and that all depends on whether you trust Apple or not.
I do, but
at least as far as that goes, I certainly don't trust Samsung. I have a Samsung TV sitting next to me. I don't trust Samsung, especially given some of the things that have been revealed about them. So I don't connect that the smart TV aspects of this.
Right.
Never mind the fact that software that they is terrible on every smart TV I've seen. I don't trust them on that. But I also think that there might be something to this whole thing about Apple's coming streaming service. So I don't want to spend the rest of the show on this, obviously there are strong opinions. So we'll be talking about this again. Yeah. Father Corey, did you see something that you liked that interested you at CES? Well,
actually, one thing that did interest is it's something that I think we're going to see in both Android and Apple iOS very soon. Of course, last year was the year of the notch.
Yes.
iPhone 10 came out with the big ugly notch, and every Android company said, this is a bad idea. Let's copy it.
I don't understand that, because I don't like the notch.
I don't get it. I'm not a fan of the notch either.
Yeah.
I hate the notch.
Why did you all add notches? So,
there's a Android phone, which probably won't be available in the United States because it's a Chinese company called Honor. The Honor View 20, it's got the whole front of the phone is a screen except one little hole punch.
Yep.
And it's the size of like a hole punch, like a three ring hole punch for the camera.
Yep.
The whole rest of the front of the phone is a screen. And I think, my opinion, Apple's going to copy that. All the Android, the next Pixel is going to have it. The next Samsung phone is going to have it.
That could be the notch. It's going to be the pinhole.
Yeah, that'll be next.
which looks a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you've got this full screen except for one little spot. And of course, that little spot is where the header is for every device.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the one issue with that is the on the iPhone, all of the there's like four or five different sensors up there in addition to the camera. And so all of that has to fit in there. And I don't think it fits in the pinhole. What I think is going to happen next is that Apple or and the rest of them will figure out how to shoot through the screen.
Right.
Right.
And that's the big thing that's coming, because that was also the other thing they're talking about, is putting a fingerprint reader on top of the screen instead of separate from it. Correct. One company has figured out how to do that, I guess. It's a small phone company that hasn't, I don't think they've really gotten the traction on it. But, you know, I think that's where everybody wants to be, is they want a seamless glass, piece of glass that is your device that has no break from edge to edge.
And you know, that the question could be, at what point do we say, you know, we really don't need selfie cameras?
Amen, brother.
Seriously. Well, seriously. And I don't mean that just because of the selfie craze.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point do we say, I don't want a front facing camera. I just want, like you said, one seamless LCD display.
Right.
Mm. Well, you know, and if I want to take a picture of myself, give me something on the back of the phone. Remember the old flip phones where they actually had the little LCD display on the back of the phone so you could take a picture with the camera and see yourself.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so they would just put it on the good camera, which, because that's the other thing, is the back camera is always the better camera.
Of course.
Exactly.
On the phones. That's possible. Although, again, because of all this Face ID stuff that they want to do and facial recognition and all that other stuff, they got to have the camera or some type of sensor on the front anyway. So maybe 6.1, but I see what you're saying. It would be interesting to see if it didn't matter which side was facing up.
Yeah. The thing now is, it was okay to have the front facing the back facing camera to yourself, but when they put the flash on there, now that got a little ridiculous. Now because it just screams
flash, front facing flash.
It just screams, take a picture of myself.
Yes.
So, and I know that the young generation likes to do that, but I just, you know, it's just for communication purposes, that's fine. But selfies, I'm right with you. I can't understand them.
Wait, you mean the flashlight?
No, the
that's what people use them for, right?
No,
they're
no,
not actually a flash.
The selfie flash.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kidding. No, I'm being.
I see what you're saying.
I know
you're
being.
Yeah. So, let's talk a little bit. A little bit more about the CES, and sort of in the larger sense of, and we'll have to do this pretty quick, but I don't want to take too much time on it. But, you know, does having an annual showcase of consumer goods, and when you look at the coverage, there are thousands of companies that show up at this thing. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got at least one product and probably dozens. Does it feed an immoral impulse of more, 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 more materialism? You know, is this good for us to have this annual showcase, or is it relatively morally neutral and it's just a matter of us being, you know, thoughtful about how we spend our cash?
Well, I'm torn because as somebody who likes technology, I like to know what people are doing, how they're trying to make life better for us. Mm-hmm. And you know, so you need something like this to show off your wares. What I don't like is a lot of the emphasis from the pundits on, you know, well, there wasn't really a good one this year. There was nothing. No, there was plenty of other things. No, there was right. this. There was that. There was.
Yep.
I walked 26 miles the entire week, you know. So,
yes.
No, just give me the highlights. Tell me what people are doing that are trying to make my life better. But
that's a good point.
Don't get me going to like spend my money, please, because there's a lot of crap out there.
The coverage is often a lot of hype, but also a lot of self-indulgence by a lot of the pundits who I can't tell you. Yeah, you're right. How many times I've seen reporters talk about how many miles they have to walk through all the halls and oh, how awful it is that I have to go to Las Vegas at the beginning of January to the desert where it's warm and not snowing.
You know? Right.
Exactly.
And how they get sick. And I mean, I get that. And some of that's just to show it's a shorthand for showing how vast the show is and how much product there is. But it's an interesting aspect, which is some of this is about the hype that the media plays more so than just about the stuff. How about you, Father Corey? Right. What's your take?
Well, you know, my take's kind of like Joanne's. I mean, it's at least CES when it first really started was more of an industry show.
Yes.
You know, like you go every industry has their shows. If you're into brewing, there's the Great American Beer Festival that, you know, showcases craft beer. You know, music has its, you know, you can go to music festivals and events where there's characters.
But those aren't even industry events. Those are more like if you want to talk about like music, it would be more like the National Association of Musicians. musicians where they
pastoral musicians.
Right. Or pastoral musicians where they showcase the organs and instruments and that sort of stuff. Right.
That's my point, though. Yep. You know, they showcase to the industry what's available for the industry, you know, and the focus of the CES, although it is called the Consumer Electronics Show, is not the consumer.
That's supposed to be. Yeah.
It's on the companies who are the sales channels.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The brick and mortar, the Amazons, the all these different companies that are going to be taking those items, buying them from Samsung, Google, Apple, et cetera, et cetera. And then selling them to us.
Putting them on the shelves.
Buy their own literature now. They're no longer the Consumer Electronics Show. They're CES. So they have shifted.
And I can't remember what they were before, but before it was CES, it was something else where it was even more clear that it wasn't, as I recall, that it was more of an industry-based show than it was a, hey, let's get all the geeks together and check out all the cool stuff that's available.
For a while there, a few years ago, they were letting people come off the, you know, buy tickets off the street to come. They actually, because it was getting out of hand, they've changed it back so that you have to be either a journalist with media credentials or someone in the, you know, a buyer or someone in the sales channel for the retailers in order to come. So that's it. They've shifted it back. But again, I think we come back to the news coverage of CES is kind of
correct
pushing that. Yeah, I think you're right. Mm. You know, one of the things that strikes me is that the sort of festival of technology that we have sort of because it has this annual cycle, we got to have something for CES, we got to have something for CES. Mm-hmm. It kind of creates these trends out of nothing that really sometimes don't go anywhere. One of the examples I look at is after HDTVs,
Home and Garden Television.
Yeah. After the high definition television switchover, where the TV industry sold mega millions of TVs, everybody bought one. Then they were like, "Okay, now what do we sell?" And so they,
exactly.
You know, they could sell higher definition ones, but you know, how much higher definition do you get? So they tried 3D TVs. That didn't really work very well. Then they tried to sell curved TVs. Nobody wants a curved TV. I mean, who wants a curved TV? Then they saw that now that, you know, the next thing is foldable TVs. And they keep trying, and they want to sell us 8K TVs. I'm like, I'm still on, a 1080. I don't even have 4K. I'm not even thinking about 8K. What do I need an 8K TV for? And it sort of drives itself when people aren't really demanding it. And that sometimes causes people to get into a cycle of buy, because it's there.
Well, and it's, it's where I think we're seeing the pushback on that in the smartphone market you've got people like me where previously it was every year to 2 years, I had to have a newer phone. Well, now, again, you know, my Pixel here is almost 2.5 years old and I'm happy with it. I'm not planning on replacing it until next year.
Maybe
the end of this year once it hits the 3 year point. You know, it's a device that works well for me, and I don't need the latest and greatest. I want the latest and greatest, of course.
Of course. And when I went last year to buy my phone, instead of buying the iPhone 10, I bought the 8 Plus because I still wanted the home button.
Yeah.
Because I need the home. For me, I need the home button. So I'm not going to go anywhere for a while.
I bought the iPhone 10, and I'm looking at the new iPhone XS. XS.
There you go.
An unfortunate the XS Max.
Got that one on the nose. Yeah.
I mean, I would love to have I love more and more screen, you know, a bigger phone. I love to have a bigger phone. But I look at it going, there's nothing more. I mean, there's a few things that it does more, but does it really make sense for me to give up this perfectly good phone that's a year old to buy something? No, I'm going to hold on to it, see what they do next year. Like, I'm just... And I'm a cutting edge sort of guy. I got the AT&T Next plan that lets me upgrade every year, and I decided not to, even though it wouldn't cost me anything extra. So it's I think you're right. I mean, the industries have gotten themselves in a bit of a bind now,
I wonder if we're going to start seeing that with TVs. Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, how many people are buying next gen Blu-ray to handle 4K?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, because of streaming and all that other stuff, I think the discs, the people making the drive, you know, the Blu-ray players and discs are stuck because, you know, what how often do I even play a disc anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, it's so rare, you know? Right. And so, right. It's interesting to see. That's why so many of these hardware companies are thinking, how do I get more services into my device? And right. that's where my money is going to come from. So that'll be interesting to look at. The other thing we didn't talk about, we'll have to talk about another time, is the rise of health, personal health technology, which is huge. And some of the mm-hmm. and home automation, more of that. But those we'll come back to those topics in future episodes. So let's get to our picks of the week then. I will. I think Joanne. I think you went last time. So I'm going to give Father mm-hmm. Corey the first pick to of this week. What do you got, Father Corey?
Well, my pick is something that's kind of fun. I've been a fan of video games since I was knee high to the grasshopper, as they, you know, some people like to say. And so I like playing old video games. You know, the new ones are, there's some amazing new video games out there. They're just beautiful and they're incredible. And they require a heck of a lot of horsepower behind your computer to play them. And I really don't have that. I've got a decent, you know, MacBook Pro. So my pick of the week is called RetroPie. Mm. RetroPie is emulation of classic systems on a Raspberry Pi. Now, I probably should use that. I'll use that as kind of my joint pick. If you're not familiar with Raspberry Pi, it's a credit card sized computer. It is a full computer. About this little bigger than about the size of a playing card, basically. Yeah. About that size.
It costs like $20 to $30, right?
$30 for the top of the line with Wi-Fi and 1080p HDMI, the whole works. And it can run a lot of these old systems. RetroPie can do something like 80 systems, I think they say. And of course, you know, some are better than others. They're all emulated. So you can have like Apple II, classic Macintosh on there. You can have all the old Atari systems, the 2600, 5200, so on. Commodore 64, my school computer. All the Nintendo systems up to the Wii. It can emulate a Wii.
Oh, wow.
The biggest thing that this can do, of course, Game Boys and things like that, too. The biggest thing that it can do is MAME, Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator, which can emulate a ton of video game systems, the old classic arcades. You can think of them, Pac-Man, and, you know, like I showed talked about last week Let's Talk, you know, but also all these other systems, just tons and tons and tons and tons of old video games, all the old Nintendo systems, all the, you know, you name it, it can emulate it. And it all runs on that little Raspberry Pi. My goal is to get an old arcade console, just the box, just the wood, and put a decent LCD screen in it, put the Raspberry Pi in there, and then hook up the joystick and buttons. That's so fun. You can play all these games on in the classic console.
That'd be fun. Now, I have to, it's probably with these systems, with these emulators, it doesn't come with the games, right?
Yes. Yeah, let's put that disclaimer there. Yeah. There is legal issues to playing some of these games. Obviously, if you're talking about something like a PC or a Commodore 64, an old Apple II, you can get the discs and convert them over. Some of these games are public domain, have been released by their manufacturer, public domain.
Which you can find a lot of these on archive.org. They have
correct. The things. Yeah. There are a lot of the games. You can get games in questionable status on the internet. Right. We're not going to tell you how.
Right. Nope.
Especially when you're talking about Nintendo. Nintendo is very jealous about this because they still make money off of Mario.
Right. You know, but you know, if you know how to use Google, you could probably
you can find them.
You feel like it's something you're okay with doing, you can find it. But yes, so but if you you know, but if you buy the cartridges, if you find them at a yard sale or you still have them, I mean, you pretty much you're probably on pretty safe ground. When I say that, there's no legal precedent; someone can always sue anyone else. But you're probably in pretty safe ground for fair use of downloading the emulator for the same game.
Yes, if you go down and download the 1000 Nintendo games.zip, you're probably on pretty sketchy ground. But let your conscience be your guide. Is that what one case?
Right. No. Right. All right. Thanks, Father Craig. That's a good one. Joanne, what's your pick for this week?
Since we're talking about smart TVs and such, I picked the Logitech Harmony Hub. Mm. It is a small hub-like controller that you can use for up between 8 and 15 devices. It's not just for audiovisual, although that's how I use it. But you can also do your smart bulbs, your smart blinds, your smart everything. And it's a the controller you can use both on iOS and Android phones. So we're talking, right. This is something where, and it's also connected to the lovely A-Lady, the lovely G-Man. And you can ask them to turn on TVs, turn off your lights. You know, you can say Merry Christmas and have your whole house light up. I just installed another one today upstairs in our house. And my husband's saying, you're really getting lazy, aren't you? You don't want you just want to walk into a room and say, do this and do that. And I'm like, yeah, I can work with that.
Yeah.
So
sounds like something my wife is telling me. Yes.
Right. But our first one we've had maybe for about 6 or 7 years. And I will give a caveat though to the app. The app can be a little frustrating on an iPhone only because the iPhone can go to sleep while you have it open.
That always annoys me. Yeah.
Yeah, it can get a little annoying, but they do have, you know, regular remotes that you can pair to them, that you don't have to worry about. But Logitech has a good product. And if you want to automate your house, this is it's a relatively simple and cheap way to do it.
Excellent.
Nice. I have an earlier Harmony remote that I used in my system and it works awesome. Mm-hmm. So this would be really cool. Cause yeah, I've got the G-Man in the house and it would be nice to be able to say, hey, I need to do this. Okay.
Alyosha, turn on the TV.
Yes. Guillermo.
Guillermo. No, Alyosha.
I'd love it.
And Shlomo.
I'd love it. I love it when we record Secrets of Doctor Who and I can say, turn on this episode of Doctor Who on BritBox.
Yes.
But
there you go.
Might not be that smart yet.
Yes, not yet. So my pick is the Withings Nokia ThermoSmart Thermometer. And this is as a disclaimer, I got this as a review device that I was allowed to keep after I was done reviewing it. But I like it enough that I would pay actual money for it. And what this is a smart thermometer. It's the forehead type of thermometer where it reads infrared. So you press the button and then you just run it in a line across the forehead of the person you're measuring. And then it will show you the temperature on the side. That's pretty straightforward. What does it need to be a smart thermometer for? Well, what it can do is it interfaces with an app, Android and iOS, on your phone, that it downloads the temperature and lets you say, this is such and such person. This is me. This is my wife. This is child number one, child number two. This is, you know, Isabella, you know, Anthony, Sophia. And so that, because anybody who's had several kids and have an illness run through the house knows, is keeping track of, you know, how many hours have they had a temperature above this much. That can get, I mean, we've had, you know, and in the middle of the night on top of it, that can become very tedious and difficult and you know, hard to keep track. And we got pads of paper everywhere and sticky notes. And is this the right one? And when did you do this? What time was that? You know, it can be very important to keep an accurate log of when, you know, the temperatures that they had, especially if you have multiple kids. So especially for any big Catholic family out there, it's useful. But even if it's just, you know, a couple of people, it's very useful to have something that keeps track of the time that you took that temperature and that sort of thing. So this is the Withings Nokia Smart Thermometer. It's FSA eligible, which means you can use your flexible spending account that some health insurance plans have to buy it. I wish we were doing this last month because you could have used up your funds at the end of the year that you might have had in your account. But it's a little pricier than a regular thermometer, a little bit more than a digital thermometer. It's about $80, somewhere around there. But it's I have found it to be very useful. So that's my pick of the week. So great. So just before we close out, I want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Technology and all the shows at the SQPN network. Today, I wanted to thank by name Amy F., Sean M., Bempta, which is the name they gave us, Mark C., and Alan and Melissa K. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Technology and all the shows at sqpn.com. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion of both fake news and CES and our picks of the week? Let us know by visiting sqpn.com/technology or the SQPN Facebook page and leave us some feedback. Or you can send an email to technology@sqpn.com. And you can find relevant links for our discussion, including our picks of the week, on our show notes at sqpn.com. Remember to like each episode of Secrets of Tech on the SQPN Facebook page. Retweet it on Twitter where we're at SQPN. Leave us comments. Subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Tune in your favorite podcast app or on YouTube where you can hit the bell to get notifications. Write a review in iTunes or one of the podcast directories. And share the podcast with your friends to help us grow our community of listeners. Until next time, Father Corey Stika, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of technology.
Well, thank you, Dom. Glad to be here.
And Joanne Mercier, thank you as well.
Thank you both very much.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.